first off, thank you, Pam. Thank you, Pat, for those very, very kind words. And thank all of you for coming out today. What a great reception, what a great crowd. And I always feel great about coming here in Oklahoma, where you have. My new family here in Oklahoma, and first and foremost is the mother of 8 children. We're raising 7, and my wife for 21 years. Someone who has been you hear this all the time. You're married up. I'm married up, and Karen is she's a nurse. She's an attorney. She's an author. She authored 2 books during the time that I was in the United States Senate, and she has just been an amazing wife and mother, and I might add, a homeschooling mother of 7. How about that? You don't hold a candle to the Duggars, but that's she does a great job. Balancing all those things and being the spouse of an elected official over those many years, and that's my wife, Karen. I clean up my children. That's the Duggars usually bring a sampling. They don't bring all 19. We have a sampling of our 7 children, number 2, 3, and 4, son John, son Daniel, and daughter Sarah Maria. Tremendous volunteer activity, lots of energy, lots of enthusiasm. I just one of the reasons I wanted to come back was really just to say thank you. I can't think of really any state where we've been embraced as much as we have here in Oklahoma. And I just wanted to come back and say thank you all very, very much. I want to point out one young volunteer who's really touched my heart. He has made 3,000 phone calls for us, and does so sitting in that wheelchair as someone who's living with spina bifida. And his name is Nathaniel. I want to thank you again, and I want to tell you that what you're fighting for why you're here and why you're active and involved in this race is for a worthy cause, because big things are happening in this country. I think we all recognize this isn't just an ordinary election. There are big things happening in this country that is going to fundamentally change the future. We see it with a president who's just seemingly indiscriminately tramples the Constitution, almost locks it. You see a Supreme Court justice, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, when asked the question whether she would recommend the American Constitution to a country that was forming a government today, United States Supreme Court justice, whose job it is to uphold the Constitution, to revere that Constitution. She said, no, she wouldn't recommend it. But she said she would recommend a South African Constitution. Because our Constitution is outdated. Written by a bunch of old men from a different time and place. And therefore needs to be updated by people with new thinking. You see, that is fundamentally against what our founders believed would keep this country free, safe, and prosperous. Because our Constitution and that document Constitution is always printed with another document, and that's the Declaration of Independence. And those two documents are vitally important to read together. And you have to understand that a lot of the folks like Ruth Bader Ginsburg and Barack Obama, not only are they trampling and trying to rewrite the Constitution, or just simply ignore the Constitution, as this president has done on repeated occasions. It's the passage of Obamacare mandating every single American as a condition of living in this country. They have to buy something the government says is best for you. And then on top of that, saying that they're going to force you to do things that are against the tenets and teachings of your faith. And it's too bad if you don't like it. If you don't like it, you pay a fine. If you don't like it, you get held up for scrutiny as being outdated. Someone who just doesn't get what's going on in the modern world. That's what we do now with people of faith. We ostracize them. They hold on to these antiquated values. You've got to get with the program. You've got to be like us. Who cares what this Constitution says? It's a dead letter anyway. Even more of a dead letter is the Declaration of Independence. That really, really worries the left of this president. Because, see, the Declaration of Independence is the anchor upon which the Constitution is tethered. Right. Amen. Constitution, I thank God. Thank God for the Tea Party, because they have put new life into the Constitution and its meaning in this country. But the Declaration is equally of importance, because the Declaration provides the basis on which the Constitution can operate. See, the Constitution is the how of America. It's the operator's manual. The Declaration is the why. We heard talk for a while now about American exceptionalism. And the fact that this president has actually answered questions suggesting that, well, America was asked questions, people believe American exceptionalism. He said, well, I believe America is exceptional, just like the Greeks believe the Greeks are exceptional and the Brits believe the British are exceptional. You know, we just all, you know, root for the home team. But no, we're no different, really, than anybody else. But we are fundamentally different than everybody else. country is founded on this premise. It's a premise that says something different than what our founders had to deal with as subjects of the king, subjected to the rule of the government, subjected to their rule and servants of the crown. Our founders said, no, we'll have no subjects. That government is there to serve the people, not the other way around. That was a radical and revolutionary idea. How could they possibly get a group of people to support that, particularly those who are used to and are accustomed to being noble and have classes? Well, they did it by appealing to the better angels of our nature. They did it by writing this in the Declaration of Independence. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal and endowed by their
Creator
with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. With those words, the world was transformed. Now, it took a lot of effort after those words were written to make them stick. Our founders who wrote that document, signed that document, did so at a time when it looked very unlikely that the independence would be won. But they stood for something higher, something greater, something true. You see, the greatness of America is we have always been able to tell the difference between right and wrong. And when we got it wrong, we always had people of faith coming into the public square telling us that we got it wrong. Now, the abolitionist movement and the civil rights movement, all led by people of faith, because the civil law did not comport with the higher law. We have that going on today in America, where the civil law does not comport. We have laws in America that says that you can kill a child in the womb. We have some in this race say that they believe that life begins at conception. I don't say that. I say I know life begins at conception. Folks, this race is a about that fundamental issue. Whether our country will be a country that is ruled by a doctrine, the Constitution, which limits the power of the federal government to protect your rights and allow this country, as it did for 200 plus years, to build a great and just society by having government not tell you what you have to buy, what you have to do outside of the church, what car you're going to get, what light bulb you're going to buy, what toilet you're going to flush. Government is ever encroaching. What loan you're going to get. All of these things, more and more government involved in more of your life. Why? Because they believe in a pre-revolutionary America where the elite should decide what's best for those, as Pat said, in flyover country, who simply don't have the capability to be free. If you watch them, listen to the president's speeches, he says it all the time. Capitalism is a failure. We need to redistribute wealth. It's resulted in income inequality. The President of the United States embraced Occupy Wall Street. A divisive force. Yeah. The President constantly is dividing America into groups, into race, ethnic group. Always playing the card, trying to incite on the issue of immigration or some other issue. Trying to say that one side isn't for you. It's not the President of the United States shouldn't do that. The President of the United States is the president for 100% American. That's 99. The President had a unique opportunity to bring America together. Unique opportunity. And he chose not to do that. He chose to abide by the principles that dividing and conquering, holding power, giving people benefits, making them more dependent upon the federal government. I wouldn't be in this race if it wasn't for one piece of legislation, Obamacare. Is the game changer for America. It's the reason that Karen and I, with seven children, ages 20 to 3 and a half, with a little special needs girl who is a miracle to be alive every day, and we are blessed with her every single day. Bella, that's right. Thank you. It's not the best time of my life to be out running for President of the United States. But it's the time when our country is at a tipping point. This election will decide what direction this country will go. Will we be a country where instead of, I think it's like 45% of Americans right now, and it's higher, it's a lot higher than it normally is. 45% of Americans depend on one sort of government benefit or another, federal benefit. And it shoots people on the margins of life, the elderly, the infirm. Four. But after Obamacare, every single American will be dependent upon the federal government for something that is arguably the most important thing here on this earth, which is your health. The government's going to tell you what you're going to get, how much you're going to get. They're going to tell you how much you're going to pay to get it. They're going to make all of these choices for you because you are incapable of freedom. And once they have, I'll never forget, Juan Williams came into, you all know who Juan Williams is. I was about to do a Fox show right about the time that the president had decided to push through the Obamacare bill through the House, the Senate version. And I saw one, and you know, the polls were all against the Tea Party, who was roiling America. And I said to one, I said, you guys are committing suicide in the next election. I said, you're going to get wiped out. I said, you're shoving this down the throats of the American public. They don't want it. And this is what he said. Well, he said, I just talked to the White House. This is what they're telling me, because you don't want the liberals to talk to the White House. He said this. They believe that America loves entitlements. And once we get them hooked on this entitlement, they will never let it go. That's how they see it. As people to get hooked. Like a drug dealer. Someone to become dependent upon them. And once that happens, they got you. America is changed forever. No country that has socialized medicine has ever gone back the other way. No country that has lost its freedom has ever regained. Of course, people say, oh, that you're over IQ things. Of course, they'll say that. They'll always jump to the side of the folks who want to have more control over their lives. Because, see, it's easier for them to influence the elite than it is to influence all of you. Folks, we have an opportunity in this race to paint a very different vision for the future of America. One that is centered on liberty. One that is centered, yes, on the economy. And everyone says, oh, it's the economy, Rick, it's the economy, Sue. But yes, it is the economy. But it's more than the economy. And I understand everybody says, well, you just got to talk about creating jobs, and that's all people want to hear about. I think we sell the American public short. If all we say, you know, we're going to cut taxes. We're going to cut taxes. And we're going to, you know, cut some spending. And that's all people care about. We need someone to go out against Barack Obama and make the case as to why Obamacare is bad for this country. Why it is going to fundamentally change it. And we need somebody who actually opposed it, as opposed to someone who supported it. And not going on Meet the Press, arguing for a federal government mandate and using the Massachusetts model as the model for Obamacare. Right. And that is exactly what Governor Romney did. Here's the interesting part. He denied it. Repeatedly denied it. Oh, I never advocated for a government-run healthcare system at the federal level, just the state level. As if that makes a big difference. But he held firm. No, I never did. And here in the last few days, USA Today article, Meet the Press interview. Who knows what else is out there on YouTube? Why would the Republican Party nominate someone who supported the very thing that started the Tea Party, that won us the election in 2010, and is our best chance to draw the clearest contrast on the issue of liberty, on the issue of the economy, on the issue of the size and scale of government, on the issue of debt and deficits? Why would this party nominate someone who supported the most egregious assault on liberty that this country has seen? That's why you are so important here. Because the folks who are backing that candidate, the billionaires and the insiders, very interesting. I looked at Governor Romney's financial contributions. Two-thirds of my contributions come from people who give under $200, small dollar donors, two-thirds. Two-thirds of his contribution come from people who give the maximum amount, $2,500. And according to him, I'm the insider. We had 130,000 donors last month, the month of February. We're the party. We should be the party of grassroots America. Not the party of the establishment. Not the party of the crowd that just wants to do a little better than where we are now. But someone who isn't beholding to the powerful interest in Washington or in New York, who didn't argue and advocate for the bailout of Wall Street, as of course Governor Romney did, and of course President Obama did. Someone who stood up when times were tough and argued the conservative case when government wanted to expand and grow. It's a very critical issue here in Oklahoma. You remember man-made global warming? Anybody remember that? It was all the rage because it was climate science. It was a fact that man was causing the temperatures to skyrocket and we would all be, you know, in heated lakes in this country in just a few years. Well, some people went along with it. Some people sat on couches with other folks from the other side of the aisle. I only sit on the couch with my wife, that's it. Others went so far as to pass CO2 caps because carbon dioxide is a dangerous thing. Tell that to a plant. And of course, we found out it wasn't climate science, it was political science.
Yeah.
But yet, the person who wants to carry the ball for the conservative cause jumped on board and passed the first CO2 cap in the history of the country in the state of Massachusetts. Last year said, oh, I still believe in man-made global warming. It's a problem we have to deal with. And yet at the same time he says, oh, I'm for energy growth. We need sharp contrasts. Not just because it will win this election. It will win the election. We're not going to win this election because we're going to outspend Barack Obama 5-1 in every state, or 10-1. You look at the states that Governor Romney's won. Every state he's won, he's outspent his opponent 5, 6, 7, 8, 10-1. Anytime he hasn't, he's lost. And even when he's won, he's outspent him by that much, just by a little bit. In the fall, we're not going to outspend Obama 10-1, 5-1, 2-1. We'd be lucky to get 1-1. They're saying he's going to have $1 billion. We're going to have someone who can run a race on ideas and on principles. Yeah. Ideas like getting this country growing again. By taking the tax code and not tinkering with it with 59 different alterations, but throwing it out, putting in two rates, 10% and 28%, 5 deductions, children, charities, pensions, health care, and housing. Everything else goes. Why? Because it's predictable. People can understand. understand what their financial commitments are and what their tax burden is. It's simple and easy to fill out for small businesses. Maybe I'm for a simple tax code for another reason, selfish one at that. Unlike everybody else in this race, I actually do my own taxes. We need a corporate tax code that is pro-growth. Spend an inordinate amount of time trying to figure out your tax liability and trying to structure your company around so you minimize your tax burden and look at, you know, all sorts of loopholes and things instead of focusing on growing your business, getting new customers, upgrading your facilities, whatever it is, hiring more people. We take the corporate tax, which is a convoluted, complex tax code. We take the corporate rate, which is 35%, the highest in the world as of April 1. Japan's cutting theirs. We cut it in half, 17.5%, and we make it a simple net profits tax. No loopholes, no deductions, flat tax. No appreciation that spends everything. It is just simple. Pro-growth will encourage people to grow their business, be able to focus on their business. And it really helps the little guy. Because the big guys dealing with corporations have big departments that can structure and find loopholes and things, and the little guy can't or doesn't. He can't spend the time or the money. It's not cost-effective. But now you're putting them on a level playing field. This is exactly what we should have in a country that believes in innovation, that believes in letting that small entrepreneur have the chance to rise and not government be on the side of complexity and big corporations. In specific, we go after one area of the economy where we're having trouble competing. As we've seen over the years, we've lost a lot of manufacturing and processing jobs here. Those jobs have headed offshore because regulation and taxation have made it too expensive. Of course, everybody focuses on, well, our labor costs are higher. Yeah, they are, in some areas. But if you exclude labor costs, according to the National Association of Manufacturers, if you look at our 9 top trading partners, that includes China, Canada, Mexico, India, if you look at those 9 top trading partners, we are 20% more expensive, excluding labor costs, than those other countries. And then we ask, why are we losing businesses? Why aren't we competitive? Well, some people have said, well, we can't treat manufacturers and processors differently. We've got to treat them all the same. That's what conservative economics is all about. And I've been attacked by the Wall Street Journal and others, saying, well, why do you not leave that rate at 17.5% for manufacturers and processors? I said, because that would still leave us at a 20% cost disadvantage. And we could still continue to leak, if not hemorrhage, jobs that should be here in America. So I propose 2 things to turn that around. Number 1, cut the corporate tax to 0 for manufacturers and processors in this country. Make it profitable for people to manufacture things here and process things here, like oil and gas. How about the idea, if you actually moved your processing plant or manufacturing facility overseas, you made money because it was cheaper to operate there, but you realized, as many businesses have, that intellectual property rights are not nearly as protected over there, that the quality of workforce is erratic, transportation is a problem, and maybe even more of a problem, particularly under this administration, as we continue to recede around the world. You see other countries trying to flex their muscle on the high seas. So the shipping lanes may not be what they are today. And so you have to look at, well, where's our market? so I said to all those manufacturers, those who made money and have that money sitting in overseas banks, because they don't bring it back, because they have to pay a 35% tax when they do, having already paid tax in the local country. So it stays in those banks, $1.7 trillion. And so what I say is bring it back. If you invest in planned equipment, no tax plan. Build up America. Training enough people to do the jobs are going to be available. Seriously, that will be a big problem. But it's a good problem to have. Obviously, one of the other keys to manufacturing is low-cost energy. You folks know a little bit about energy here in Oklahoma. But we need to do things to help the consumer, to help the manufacturer, to help the business people in this country to have affordable energy. Affordable transportation costs. We can do this. We know how to do this. But a president who blames everybody but himself for the problems that he's confronted in his administration. Yet when it comes to energy, if you ask whether we can drill offshore, no. Whether we can drill in deep water, no. Whether we can drill on federal lands, no. Whether we can drill in Alaska, no. Whether we can build the Keystone Pipeline? No. You need a president who says yes to energy development. Support Barack Obama. But if you told people in America that, you know what, we've fracked, according to at least some numbers, I've seen about 800,000 wells since World War II using this technology. It's not new. It's not revolutionary. And yet, we have a president who doesn't care. Who doesn't care about what's true. He cares about using whatever it takes to get more power to the federal government so he can control the different aspects of the economy. We need a president who, we need a presidential nominee who can go out and make the case on issue after issue, not be compromised because of their past. Not be compromised because, oh, well, you know, you say you were against it, but you know what, here you were on this issue just, you know, a year or two ago. This election must be about big things. It can't be about Tweedledum and Tweedledee. It's got to be about a big thing because, you know what, this country needs big things to happen. Washington, D.C. right away is we have to deal with the debt, the sin, and the debt. Yeah. Right? Yeah. Without increasing taxes.
Right. That's right.
Without increasing taxes. Yeah. We're not going to increase taxes.
Yeah.
But look at my record. 16 years in Congress. Plenty of opportunities to increase taxes. Not one vote ever to increase taxes. The problem. If you look at the overall budget, historically we spend about 18-19%. The federal government has made up about 18-19% of the overall economy. That's the historic average since World War II. Taxes have been a little less than that because we've run deficits, but you know, half a percent, a percent below that. So they've been, you know, 17-19% in that area. Where are we today? Where's the problem today? What's causing this big deficit where 42 cents of every dollar has to be borrowed? Well, we're collecting about 16.5-17% of GDP in revenues. Excuse me. It's a little low. It's about 1.5, maybe even 2% below the average. But what are we spending? About 24 or 25% of GDP. The reason that our revenues are low is because we have high rates of unemployment and we don't have capital gains because the housing market is terrible. Capital markets are bad. We haven't seen real growth in capital gains of any sort. And so our revenues are down. But of course, if the economy turns around, those revenues will come up and will be easily back to the norm, probably a little above. If the economy turns around, spending will go down a little, but not nearly enough. We have a structural deficit problem that is built on spending, not revenues. If you can solve the problem by taxing the rich, and just look at what Britain did last year. They increased their top tax rate. And they got way less money than they anticipated. Guess what? Rich people can move their money to other places. As we saw from someone who went out, as I did, and worked, my tax rate was about 27-28%. Governor Romney's was half that amount. I'm not criticizing him. He had capital gains. That's how he got. Now, he could take his capital gains and he could take his investments and move them offshore, move them someplace else. Now, I'm not saying he would do that, but I'm saying a lot of people could do that and would do that if the government said we're going to now start taxing you more on this. You can chase rich people all you want, try to tax them at 80% or 90%. They either stop investing or they'll move. And guess who ends up paying more then? That's right. Well, we have bigger deficits, and then you pay more by having to pay interest on that. We need a pro-growth president who can go out and say, no tax increases, tax cuts to stimulate growth, and we need serious deficit reduction. I've called for $5 trillion of deficit reduction in 5 years, compared to Governor Romney's $500 billion. One-tenth of what he has suggested. One-tenth. He suggested $500 billion, 5 versus 5 trillion. I said we would balance the budget in 5 years, and I would propose a budget that spends less money every year than the year before. Governor Romney the other day said that he would hopefully get it close to balance by the end of his second term. Bold leadership. Clear contrasts. Wall Street Journal called my economic plan supply-side economics for the working man. Compared it to Governor Romney's, which they said was timid and would be ineffectual on either the deficit or growth. We need a clear contrast in this election. We need someone who's going to go out and paint a vision for where America can go, where everybody in America, skilled, high-tech workers, semi-skilled and lower skilled, all will have an opportunity in the economy that we're going to create, in a sense, the petri dish for it to grow in. I hesitate to say we're going to create jobs in government because I don't believe that. We create an atmosphere for you to create jobs. Take signs, sign up, go to our website, get out to headquarters, put those signs up, sign up to make phone calls. We'll be here talking to folks, take a few pictures, put them up on your website or up on your Facebook page or tweet it out. Communicate. Get this brush fire going. I saw a few brush fires on the way over. Different kind of brush fire. We need another kind of brush fire here from the heartland. We need to have that big.